This is Ahead of the Curve, a Banker's Podcast.
Welcome to this episode of Ahead of the Curve, a Banker's Podcast. I'm your host, Thomas Curley, and I'm here with Daryl Matea. Daryl is a senior advisor on Abrigo's advisory services team, where he manages the deposit and loan pricing services and also consults regularly with institutions on their funding strategies, pricing analysis, and loan strategies. Before joining Abrigo, Daryl and Tom Farron co-founded Farron Financial Risk Management's internet division. He also runs the funding track program at the Graduate School of Banking at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. So we're super excited to have him on today, and I just wanted to thank you for hopping on, Daryl.
No problem. Thanks, Thomas. You know, this first week of September is always an interesting transition time in a lot of ways, where in part your attitude is all of a sudden less laid back, right? Because we call it the official end of summer at our house. For one reason, here in Wisconsin, we're probably gonna have to start wearing our sweaters when we go outside. Like we sit outside for happy hour, and it ain't gonna be long. So it forces you to start changing your routines. And I know this week, a lot of bankers are gonna buckle down about now and say, okay, it's time to finally deal with this unprecedented rate environment and what it might mean for our funding needs and deposit products. And we know this because it's already happening. We're having these regular conversations on this topic. What is usually motivating people at this moment is a recognition that, quote, we probably ought to do something about rates, unquote. I mean, I've heard that said directly in the last few weeks. But it often isn't any more specific than that. So, of course, you don't have to look very far to see what's going on in deposit markets. You know, the Fed increases are obvious, right? But I'm talking more about the retail product and pricing changes that we're seeing. So start with the fact that virtually all of the online banking providers, Ally, American Express, Marcus, Synchrony, they all have a no minimum high yield savings product paying right now between 1.5% and 2%. Big change, right, in a few months. There are CD specials popping up in every market we look at. And as a result, some of your depositors are starting to look for yield or look for rate. So whether you need the funding or not, which is another interesting issue, you're forced to think about responding if you haven't already. And that's why I'm calling this the 2022 funding challenge. To put it simply, you probably have to do something even if you don't think you need to.
Love that word. Probably need to do something. Little odd phrasing there. But one thing I caught while you're chatting there was you talked about unprecedented rate scenario. And I know I see articles pop up every single day talking about recession this or maybe not recession this, rate that. Why are you calling this an unprecedented rate scenario? Kind of your mind.
Yeah, good catch, because I don't use that term lightly because I kind of get annoyed when people say this is an unprecedented time. Well, actually, you know, it isn't. Well, this one is. For one reason, the speed. We had that big rapid drop in rates during the pandemic, right, where really it only took institutions a couple of months to rapidly drop all of their rates. You know, the Fed dropped, you know, basically to zero. And now they're going up at a rapid pace. And it's actually the reaction which is faster than usual. So in pricing, we talk about the lag between when wholesale rates go up and then when retail rates respond. Well, this is not an unprecedented increase in wholesale rates. I mean, the Fed has stepped up rates 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times a year before. What's different is our retail rates are responding much more quickly than they ever have. The other reason is we have much more liquidity than usual. Normally, at the start of a general rate increase like this, the economy's already heated up and liquidity is already getting tight. So you're already in this, where am I going to get my funding sort of mindset. But we had all these surge balances that flowed in during the pandemic. You know, many institutions are still running a loan deposit ratio of 70% or so. So you don't necessarily need the funding today, which makes it also kind of peculiar. The third reason is margins. Net interest margins, I think we've talked about this on earlier podcasts. Net interest margins continue to shrink for just about every category and size of financial institution. You know, when rates go up, we expect margins to get better. but they really aren't getting better. And now deposit rates and costs got so low that it will be very difficult to maintain the same margins in this environment. And some of this is purely mathematical because of how low rates got. I know institutions that could easily have double the interest expense next year that they have this year because their costs were so low and we have to go up. So that's going to be another real challenge to manage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned that the unprecedented portion of this was, hey, how people are reacting. So I was going to ask, what are you seeing institutions do specifically? They're reacting quickly, but what are they doing about it?
That's the thing. They're not all reacting quickly. There's basically three reactions we're seeing. I put them in three categories right now. Some institutions are still playing a waiting game and haven't responded at all yet. They're just waiting to see what's going to happen. Some are reacting to what I call internal pressure. So again, they may not necessarily need the funding, but they have large depositors starting to make noise, which means they have identified some significant rate sensitive funding in their institution that they don't necessarily want to lose, even though they would be okay today if they did. So they respond with what we call stealth or exception pricing, stuff that's not published. Or they create a special product with a high balance requirement or some other relationship requirements to hang on to that funding. So they're handling the squeaky wheel, so to speak. And then there are institutions who have prepared for this and they're executing a specific plan that they've been thinking about for a while. That specific plan might involve positioning themselves relative to key competitors or simply pricing to maintain a margin while paying the best rates possible. But given what they see going on, they are responding in a specific way.
Gotcha. And so I think that's a good jumping off point. So talked a little bit about just what's going on overall from a market perspective. And you'd mentioned that, folks are responding in one, two, or three different ways. Let's talk about whether the reaction is the correct one. So I was curious to get your take on maybe, are there any mistakes that people might be making right now in this environment if they are actually moving and trying out something?
Yes, we think so. And admittedly, some institutions will say they've made mistakes in the past. The easiest mistake to make in a rapidly changing environment is to react without a strategy. You follow the market rather than following a strategy. And a lot of people in this industry will say, yep, I'm guilty of that. It's pretty easy to create a product that appeals to rate-sensitive depositors and raises funding. But it becomes too expensive when you realize how popular it is, and it brings in not only new funding, but funding internally to the institution. So that can be a mistake. Or a similar mistake is you do a general rate increase without understanding what the behavior of your less rate-sensitive money is going to be. So you react, and you end up overpaying for no benefit. We see that happen as well. Another mistake is focusing too much on rates. There's so much focus on rates that alone can be a mistake. And you may not then understand that you have other major funding risks that should probably be dealt with and aren't being addressed. For example, there's one that sneaks up on people all the time, and it's market share. Your market share may be declining even though you have enough funding or your funding went way up. Because people lose sight of that. There's a big shift going on in terms of where new checking accounts get originated. And guess what? They get originated online, right? In a much higher proportion than they used to. And a lot of community institutions have lost that market share and their funding plan isn't addressing that because they're too laser focused on what's going on in the rate environment.
Gotcha. Yep. It's a perfect example of the loudest voice in the room, which is rates in this case, sometimes dictates things a little bit more than it should.
That's right. Exactly.
So we talked about some of maybe the things that might be, weaknesses or common mistakes that are being made. On the flip side, what is, in your opinion, a well-prepared institution doing right now that's different than some of those items you just laid out a second ago?
Yeah, that's a really good question. We have a few institutions that have had specific strategies in place for some time, and they're simply executing those strategies. And it is delightful to me when I see that happen. For example, there are institutions that base their pricing changes based on what they see exactly see going on in their local markets. And we call these, we call this approach using pricing rules, where you say you keep your money market rates at a level that's in specific proportion to key competitor rates. So number one, you don't react until they do. And when you do react, it's not a blind reaction. It's a specific reaction based on a calculated rate, a calculated approach that you think or you've proven to yourself in the past will preserve the balances that you are concerned about. And, you know, when I see somebody executing that, it reminds me that, you know, a lot of professions practice something that they don't do very frequently. I enjoy being at a major league baseball or even a minor league baseball game and watching a rundown take place. You know, a runner gets stranded between two bases, and well-prepared professionals know exactly what to do. It's a joy to watch. Just they quickly move into position. Now, rundowns don't happen very often in baseball.
And no one steals anymore.
Yeah. And when they do, but when they do, the well-prepared teams are prepared for that. And I look at that as an example we could learn from in our industry. You know, don't just go, oh my gosh, that guy's trying to go from second to third base. Go, ah, we're going to implement our rundown, you know, a strategy on this. So that's what the well-prepared institutions are doing. They're number one, they're not panicking. Number two, they're not overreacting. Number three, they're doing some very specific things that they've already talked about.
Gotcha. That's a perfect segue into the kind of one of the other sets of questions I wanted to ask were, hey, if we got a bank or credit union listening to the podcast right now and they're saying, we do not have that rundown rule, you know, in place. We don't have a plan that we're going to be able to get the guy and stop him from getting to third. You know, what should they start doing now to get prepared? And so one of the things that popped in my mind was maybe a core deposit study, and was curious on, you know, if you had any feedback on that.
Yeah, you know, a core deposit study is really important, not just for regulatory reasons. And a lot of people engage us to do that because they're being asked to do one. But we think it's really important to have a recent one either available or you know, some of the output from them available. A core deposit study provides very valuable insight into the behavior of your depositors. I mean, that's what it does. It studies the behavior. What did they do last time rates went up? Well, there's a bunch of things we measure that are really useful in deciding how should we react next time rates go up, or what are they likely to do? You know, when do people leave? How often do they leave? When do they stay? Those kinds of things. Now, if that isn't possible, what I would be doing at a minimum is I would create what we call an inventory of your funding sources. And this is more than just GL balances. You basically, just like, you know, a local retailer has to take inventory. Well, maybe they've automated it, but, you know, in the old days, we used to count inventory, right? You should be doing that in your financial institution with your funding sources, but at a level that's much more detailed. It's not hard to do, but it specifies the types of balances you have and the trends you've seen. So a really good inventory segregates balances, not just by product, which checking account or which whatever, but by demographic group, by business industry group. You know, where are public funds? Where are large depositor balances, small depositor balances? And the reason that's so important is because they all behave differently and respond differently when rates change. So I do that for sure. Second thing I would do is I would enable a process, if you're not already doing it, of monitoring and evaluating key competitors and rates. In deposit pricing, competitor rates are a very good benchmark to use in deciding, you know, what to do and what kinds of pricing rules to put in place. So you may already have access, a lot of institutions have access to competitor data through survey providers and so forth, but it's changing so fast that part two of that is looking at it, evaluating it. A really good pricing committee will do this regularly. They'll get together and they'll say, okay, what's happening in our market? Why do we think that's happening? Who moved? What do you think they're doing by moving and so forth? That's really key in putting funding strategies together. The third thing I would do is a lot of institutions are already out there with ideas, right? They're thinking, hey, we should maybe do this. We should maybe run a special. We should maybe make a rate change here because we're concerned about balances. All right, we'll put that into a real specific spreadsheet plan and start mapping out the potential costs and dollar volume specifics. And again, this is more than just making budget projections. We have budget season coming up in our industry, which is, you know, starts in October, goes on till January or so forth. This is more than a budget. This is going in and saying, okay, you think we should do this particular promotion. Let's run the numbers. Tell me what, you know, you think is going to happen and what rates will change. And then share that information with retail and frontline staff before you implement it, because you'll get a lot of really good feedback there. Too often I see institutions that do this in the back room and then they roll it out and they don't take time to really look at what they're specifically thinking about doing for the impact and the cost impact and so forth.
Mm-hmm. No, those are three good takeaways. I think a lot of times when something unprecedented pops up on the radar, as you pointed out earlier, you kind of, if you don't have a plan already, you freeze and you don't know what to do. And so I think those are three good actionable things to take a look at in every market, regardless of whether you're bank, credit union, Midwest, Pacific, you know, small or large. So I think that's a great place to start. So we're at about 15, 16 minutes here, Daryl. So we're going to start wrapping up our quick conversation here. And for the folks that are listening on the podcast, we like to leave them with kind of your three big thoughts on, hey, if you listen to the podcast, what should you take away from this? And wanted to tee it up for you. And what would be those three big things you'd want everyone to take back to their institution?
Well, I don't know if it's three, but I'll tell you what the big things are. So look, what I'm calling this 2022 funding plan is... funding challenge is here and now. In other words, it can't wait. I think that's fairly obvious to most people, but I would ask yourself to evaluate your plan, which may be nothing, right? Even if you haven't done anything yet, what is your approach or what is your approach going to be? It's very common in an environment we've just been through, which is this buildup of liquidity, to go, okay, that's not a problem. I don't need to worry about liquidity. You do. You always have funding risks. So my main takeaway is, describe what the nature of your plan is. You know, is it a single product strategy? Is it something else? What will trigger your responses and why? Now, we've got lots of ideas on this. So on September 28th, we are going to do a 60-minute webinar and dive into these topics a little bit deeper. We'll do some real specifics. I'm going to go through some very specific examples of what people are doing, what they put into their plans, and why. And I'll describe the specifics of what we think are useful and helpful funding plans, why they're useful and helpful, and what it takes to create and maintain them. It does have to be efficient. You know, we're not, we see funding plans that are too much work that don't get implemented. So we'll cover that in the webinar, September 28th. 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Central. I guess that'd be 11 p.m. West Coast time for roughly an hour, and go into that in a lot more detail.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks, Daryl. And thanks for plugging that session. I think it'll be a good one. It's a topic that we're seeing a lot of interest around. And also, just given everything we've just discussed, I think it's an important one to address for financial institutions.
Yeah. And one thing I want to add to that, Thomas, is it's not really a scary thing when I go through and show people, look, this is what you can do for an inventory that gets you off the ground. This is what you can do for a basic plan. These are some key things to put into a plan and then meet regularly on it. It's not overwhelming when you do that. And that's one of the points we're going to make. But, you know, we have real issues to respond to, so we got to be thinking about it, right?
Mm-hmm. No, thanks for that clarification. I think that's good to know when something sounds really big and scary, but there is a path to making it a little bit less daunting. For those that are new listeners or maybe have not subscribed to our podcast yet, you can find this podcast and future episodes on abrigo.com, or you can search it on your favorite podcast app or platform. Search Ahead of the Curve, a Banker's Podcast. Or if you want to type out a few less letters, you can hit and search Abrigo, and this should pop right on up. We want to thank everyone so much for listening, and we'll be back again with you soon with our next episode. And Daryl, thank you so much for joining and for your time and insights, and we hope we'll have you back here soon.
Yes, thanks for having me. I love talking about this stuff, so happy to do it.
Great. Well, thanks, everyone, and talk soon.